questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
We can say. Now the question is that, can the imam decide for the other people around himself too? Because he has the knowledge of what's going to happen to him. True. But what about the other people? For example, family members, children, wives, you know, the women, the companions of the imam, the soldiers.
True.
For sure, they did not have this ilm al-laduni, isn't it?
Right.
We can say. Well, what about that?
Right. So when Imam alayhi salam has been told about this event of Karbala in the hadith from the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and from his knowledge from God, he knows about it. So he knows that this way and this sacrifice that is going to be given by Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam is going to awaken the ummah of the Prophet.
Okay.
And it is a necessary sacrifice that has to be given.
Yes.
So he prepares for this sacrifice in such a way that it can reap maximum benefit for the cause of the religion.
All right.
And as a result, he invites everyone.
That's
he
right.
invites his family members. He invites his companions to join him on this journey towards Kufa, knowing that in the end, this would end in his martyrdom.
Yes, okay. Sheikh, another question for today's episode is that Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam lost the war to Yazid.
Right.
He and his companions were killed and his family were taken as a captive. But it's still the story of Ashura and Karbala is alive in the history. It's fresh. I mean, this story is still recited and referred to. So, from one side, we have Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, who was overwhelmed by Yazid. From the other side, we have this freshness in the history of Islam. How is it possible? How do you answer this contradiction?
Right. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So, we have this concept that in Islam, martyrdom is the biggest honor that a person can get in life. So, what is important here is that what was the goal of the movement of Imam Husayn alayhi salam? If the goal of the movement of Imam Husayn alayhi salam was only to get worldly power, to become the leader of or the ruler of the ummah, only the hakim of the ummah, then we can say that he was defeated. But the goal of the movement of Imam Husayn alayhi salam, in his own words, was much, much bigger than getting the rulership or the leadership of the Muslim Ummah. Rather, the goal of Imam Husayn alayhi salam, in his own words, was Islahi Ummat Jaddi.
Yes.
And to awaken the people to Amr bil Maruf wa Nahi az Munkar, tell them what
enjoining the good and forbidding the evil.
So it was an Islahi, a reformist movement. And this reform movement and this going back to your roots movement was all that was achieved and through the sacrifice that Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam gave. So if we are clear about the goal of this movement, we know that Yazid and the people who supported Yazid, the Bani Umayyah, these were the losers and the winners overall, not only in the material world, but also in for the cause of this religion, was the movement of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam.
That's right. So all in all, vividly, there is no contradiction between the two.
True.
I mean, for instance, we could say that that's right. Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam lost the war, but he was successful.
Yeah, we can say that even the aim of the movement was to awaken the people, Amr bil Maruf and Nahi az Munkar, forbidding the right and forbidding the evil and enjoining the right.
Okay.
So this aim was even achieved by the death of the imam. The death was also a victory because even in his death, he was able to awaken the people. For example, the episode that we recorded about the head, severed head of the Imam, reciting the verses of the Quran that Am hasibtum anna ashabal kahfi war raqim kanu min ayatin ajaba. So this same verse, while being recited by the severed head on top of a spear, is going to awaken people. The khutbas, the sermons of Lady Zainab salamullah alayha in Damascus and in Kufa are awakening the people. The Muslim Ummah is awakening from its slumber. And that's why we see that after the martyrdom of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, all these movements are coming. For example, the movement of Mukhtar, Mukhtar al-Saqafi comes about. The movement in Medina comes about.
Tawabin,
The Tawabin.
Yes.
All these movements are basically for the cause of avenging the blood of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. So we can say that even in the material terms, this movement was successful. And also in ukhravi and revelational and spiritual terms, we can say that this movement was successful. And to this day, we can see the fruits of this movement in the Islamic revolution, in which Imam Khomeini, Rahmatullah Alayh, says that one of the fruits of the movement of Karbala is the revolution that has been led by Iran and the Islamic Republic of Iran.
That's all right. All right, Sheikh. Thank you very much. Anything missed, Sheikh? No, nothing? Thank you. It was very kind of you. Thank you very much for a nice elaboration regarding these two questions, two important questions related to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. It was very kind of you.
Thank you.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن
يوسف جلالي بتهران
روباشافت غازا
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
In the wake of a devastating landslide, Ethiopia has declared 3 days of national mourning. Rescue teams are working tirelessly to recover the bodies of those lost in a series of deadly landslides that struck the southern part Gofa zone last Sunday and Monday. According to reports, the landslides have claimed the lives of hundreds of people so far. The UN Humanitarian Office has warned that the death toll could reach 500. Local officials also say the magnitude of the accident is high. The devastating landslide has left many in the Gofa zone grappling with unimaginable loss. Families have been torn apart, with loved ones tragically taken from them. Alemi Tusoma, a resident of the Genjo Shochagozi district, is among those who lost their loved ones due to the incident.
My husband died in the sudden mudslide and I buried his body. I'm now left alone with my twins. Besides, my sister is also dead. and her body has not been found. I'm searching for her corpse. Now everything is dark. I'm burnt and I feel abnormal. I don't even know where I should go.
Soma's pain mirrors the heartbreak felt by many in Gofa Zone, where the shocking landslide occurred. Local officials say there are also people who lost their entire families in this incident. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed expressed his deep sorrow after the catastrophic incident, saying he is deeply saddened by this terrible loss. His words reflect the grief felt by the nation as a whole. During the 3 days mourning, beginning as of Saturday, people across the country will honor those who lost their lives in a tragic event. And of course, for the coming 3 days, Ethiopian national flag will be flown at half-mast across the country, on Ethiopian ships, and at embassies around the world. Emmanuel Gebremedin, Addis Ababa.
South Koreans on Saturday gathered the Demilitarized Zone, the heavily fortified border with North Korea, to mark the 71st anniversary of the end of the 1950-53 Korean War. Civic leaders argue that the decades of tension on the Korean Peninsula demonstrate the need for a more stable agreement.
An unstable armistice with us constantly competing with each other to hide our anxiety is a war of attrition that leaves us with nothing to gain. We must come together to end the armistice and move toward a permanent peace treaty.
Recent weeks have seen rising tensions, including defector groups in the south launching anti-Pyongyang propaganda by sending balloons northward, and North Korea responding with its own balloons carrying garbage to the south. South Korea's Yoon administration in June suspended the 2018 military agreement with North Korea that banned cross-border provocations, including military drills near the DMZ. Now the U.S. and South Korea have resumed large-scale joint military exercises near that inter-Korean border. Despite the upbeat mood of the event, the tension along the DMZ is ever-present, especially for those from the area, many of whom oppose the joint drills with the U.S.
It's very close, so I think it's really wrong to have joint U.S.-South Korea training here. The U.S. also needs to change its mind now.
The joint exercises assume North Korea as an enemy and are aimed at completely taking over North Korea militarily within 2 or 3 days. So in the end, it only ends up provoking North Korea.
After the event, participants brought their message of peace as close to North Korea as they could, to the border of the civilian control zone and the DMZ, across the unification bridge. Frank Smith, Imjin Gak, South Korea.
Shockwaves have rippled through the Muslim community in the UK in the wake of an incident involving British police officers brutally attacking a family of Muslim citizens of Pakistani origin at Manchester Airport. In the footage that has since gone viral online, police officers can be seen attacking at least two men, with one policeman kicking a man as he lies on the ground, posing no threat. He then stamps on the victim's head with full force, narrowly avoiding making full contact in what many say was an action that would have almost certainly killed the man. And the shocking images have led to outrage, especially within the British Muslim community. Hundreds of protesters gathered outside the office of Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham to demand an immediate investigation and an end to what they described as brutal and racist policing. The lawyer representing the victims, identified only as Fahir and Ahmad, has emphasized the severity of the attack.
If five civilians got together and did that on another person, then they would be charged with joint enterprise attempted murder. So let's wait and see what happens to these police officers. As of yet, the investigation is at its very early stages.
The Greater Manchester Police have released a statement claiming that prior to the altercation seen in the footage, the men had assaulted three police officers, with one officer sustaining a broken nose. Sources close to the men say the altercation began after the family suffered racist abuse from a member of the public, and instead of taking action against the perpetrator, one of the police officers physically attacked their elderly mother, who the boys then rushed to protect.
Following the initial statement, Greater Manchester Police have released another statement announcing that one of the officers involved has been suspended from all duties. Meanwhile, an independent investigation is also reportedly underway. However, local community members here remain doubtful that justice will be served in this case.
He has physically assaulted a member of the public, physically. Regardless to whatever's happened, he should be dismissed straight away and change should be brought.
There's a doctor who's come on TikTok today as well and on social media platform, and he has said as well, the way he was kicked in the head and in the nose, he could have died there. So the point is, it's not just about him being suspended. It's him and every single other officer that was involved in the incident, and it's also their seniors.
You wouldn't treat an animal the way they treated them humans. Them innocent children lying on the floor. He's not even 20 years old. I believe he's 19. The way he was treated, he was lying harmlessly on the floor, and they've come and attacked him.
As tensions run high, right-wing racist elements have jumped onto the story to fuel division and praise the violence displayed by the police in their own efforts to inflame Islamophobic hatred and spark what they believe will be a war of religious and racial hatred in the UK. How the police handle this incident will no doubt influence whether they'll be successful or not. Issa Kadhimi, Manchester, England.
As the election day draws near, Venezuela's main presidential candidates have held their closing rallies in Caracas. Chavisa's packed Avenida Bolivar as far as the eye could see for incumbent President Maduro's final re-election campaign rally.
The election is important because we have to maintain the legacy. We have to maintain our patriotism so that everything continues, all the missions continue, in education, health, and other sectors. With another administration, everything will be privatized, and we should defend what we have built so far.
I am going to vote for President Nicolas Maduro because he is the president of the people, the president who will lead us to peace, who will bring us happiness.
The incumbent president has promised to advance the Bolivarian revolution and maintain peace and stability in the country. Maduro's leadership has put the country on better footing economically.
Por la paz, por la independencia.
For peace, independence, stability, and for genuine democracy, love, and reconciliation. The main task at the moment is to unite all Venezuelans.
The president's main challenger, Edmundo González, held a similar rally in the upscale Las Mercedes neighborhood, joined by Maria Corina Machado, a prominent far-right figure who was disqualified from running by the Venezuelan Supreme Court. Machado, who's been living in Florida, promises to build strong relations with the United States as the party intends to break with the socialist Bolivarian model.
We've witnessed a massive rally in support of the re-election of President Nicolas Maduro. The period of electoral silence begins on Friday, and on Sunday, we'll be reporting at the polls and following developments closely. Camila Escalante, Caracas.
In the port of Hodeida in western Yemen, the Ministry of Human Rights, the Ministry of Oil and Minerals, and local authorities held a press conference under the theme Zionist Aggression Against Yemen and Continued International Spectatorship. The event focused on the recent Israeli attack on oil tanks in the port, which tragically claimed the lives of 9 civilians and injured over 80 others. The press conference highlighted the importance of the port for millions of Yemenis and condemned the Israeli aggression, stating that the port is a civilian facility protected under international law and should not be targeted by any party.
This is the site of the crime committed by the Israeli regime, bombing a civilian oil facility protected under international law. More than 20 raids destroyed all the tanks in the port of Hodeidah, exacerbating the suffering of citizens. We have 9 martyrs and 83 wounded in this crime, and the number of the dead is likely to increase as most of the injuries are serious. Unfortunately, dozens of people are still missing under the rubble, and rescue teams have been unable to recover their bodies.
Regarding the power station and the firefighting efforts, things went well. The Ministry of Oil and the Ministry of Electricity confirmed that there was no need for concern. What happened was just a show by Israel and an attempt to directly harm the Yemeni people.
Officials assert that Israel's aggression is a clear violation of Yemen's sovereignty and a threat to the people's safety, as well as the flow of goods to millions of civilians. Nevertheless, the people here remain steadfast, expressing their full support for the Yemeni army's resistance against the Israeli regime. Abdul Latif Al-Washali from Hodeidah Port.
We are in the port of Hodeidah, which is the site of an Israeli airstrike that targeted Yemen's fuel and diesel storage tanks earlier this week. The area is a haunting scene of devastation, with twisted and mingled metal pieces and charred remains of storage tanks. The sharp stench of burning oil can still be felt in the surrounding. However, despite the destruction inflicted by the Israeli attack, the port of Hodeidah remains fully operational, according to the governor.
As you can see, despite the misleading reports from pro-Israeli media, the port of Hodeidah stands resilient. Within a mere 24 hours after the attack, it was back in full operational mode. We will rebuild and reconstruct. They won't be successful in getting rid of this port. However, by the will of Allah, we will indeed get rid of Israel.
People of Hodeidah also have strongly condemned the attacks. They say Israel is attempting to destroy Yemen's civilian infrastructure to cause widespread fuel and gas shortages across the country.
Today, we send a message to Israel and America, and we tell them that your attacks on the port of Hodeidah and the fuel storage tanks will not impact us in any way. They want us to discontinue attacks on Israel, but our operations will continue until they stop attacking Palestinians.
There are no fuel shortages. As you can see, cars and motorbikes are running comfortable. By the grace of Allah, fuel and everything are available.
Ansarullah officials say the government has taken all necessary measures to ensure that even in a case of a full-scale war with Israel, Yemenis will never have to experience another humanitarian crisis. According to Ansarullah, the only thing Israel is able to hit is civilian infrastructure and civilian facilities. This is due to Israel's failure to locate and identify where and how the Yemeni army is launching attacks that have hit the heart of the Israeli regime. Yusuf Maudi, the port of Hodeidah.
Ahmet Yıldız, Turkey's envoy to the UN, has raised the alarm over the dire humanitarian situation in Syria as he addressed the Security Council on Monday. Yıldız expressed concern over the situation in northeastern Syria, accusing the US-backed PKK, YPG and SDF of pursuing a separatist agenda. He called on the international community to oppose such plans.
As part of the overall effort to resolve the conflict, the preservation of the territorial integrity and political unity of Syria is of paramount importance for the future of the country and the region. Having said that, the PKK, YPG, and so-called SDF terrorist organization tries to advance its separatist agenda in Syria through all possible means in contravention of the Security Council Resolution 2254. Also, the terrorist organizations must not be treated as if they were a legitimate actor, as it commits grave human rights violations against local people in northeast Syria and deliberately impeding the delivery of humanitarian aid to the north of the country.
Turkey has consistently warned its allies against supporting terrorist organizations, stressing that the presence of such groups at its borders poses a threat to the country's national security. The issue has strained ties between Ankara and Washington. Analysts argue that U.S. support for militant organizations in northern Syria is more than just backing them to fight Daesh. They believe the move can be aimed at dividing Syria and establishing an autonomous state under the thumb of the U.S.
For 40 years, the Pentagon has been attempting to establish a new Israel in northern Syria and Iraq. The United States has occupied parts of Syria to give legitimacy to this new state. Therefore, Turkey has the right to oppose this plan, but it cannot do so alone. For this reason, Turkey is trying to coordinate with the Syrian government in Damascus, the Iraqi government in Baghdad, and the Iranian government. We must make sure that Washington is not after dividing Syria. Therefore, there must be military resistance to the American presence in the region. Turkey, Syria, and Iraq must establish a military alliance against U.S.-backed forces in order to make Washington withdraw from the region.
Turkey says it has the right to protect its borders from the threat of the separatist group's presence in the neighboring Syria, expressing the will to establish a 30 to 40 kilometer deep security corridor along the border. Ankara launched three cross-border military operations in 2016, 2018, and 2019 in a trial to eliminate the militant groups. As Turkey is voicing serious concerns over the presence of terrorist groups at its borders, experts argue that the country cannot fight the U.S.-backed separatist project in Syria alone. They say in order to achieve security, Ankara needs to join forces and cooperate with the countries in the region, including Syria itself. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
In a significant development for Yemen, the UN envoy to Yemen, Hans Grundberg, announced a breakthrough agreement between the governments of Sana'a and the Saudi-appointed presidential council. The agreement focuses on de-escalating issues related to the banking sector and Yemeni airlines.
We hope, God willing, that this agreement will be a good beginning and a sign that the provisions will be implemented and the humanitarian suffering of the Yemeni people will be alleviated with regard to the airport and flights to multiple destinations. We also hope that suspended salaries will be dispersed and that the economic and humanitarian situation caused by the Saudi-led aggression over the past years be addressed, as Yemen has now taken a strong position in support of Palestine and deserves to be looked into.
A major part of the agreement includes resumption of Yemeni Airlines flights between Sana'a and Jordan. The airline will increase its operations to 3 daily flights and plans to start flights to Cairo and India either daily or as needed. Meetings are also underway to tackle the administrative, technical, and financial challenges facing Yemen Airways.
Certainly, this is an advanced step in the course of the dialogues taking place between Yemen and Saudi Arabia, which wants to shrink its humanitarian obligations by closing the airport and stopping flights of the Yemenis, as well as economic sanctions and preventing banks from operating in Sana'a. We hope that all parties will implement the agreement, especially the Saudi party, which always evades implementing its obligations.
Grundberg has also called for the immediate cancellation of recent decisions and measures taken against banks by both sides. Additionally, the parties have agreed to start discussions on broader economic and humanitarian issues following a designated roadmap.
While observers believe that these steps are crucial for stabilizing Yemen's banking sector and preventing further economic deterioration, people here say this agreement marks a hopeful step forward for Yemen, potentially easing economic pressures and improving travel availability. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the days after President Biden endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris to replace him in the 2024 presidential race, several Republican lawmakers suggested she had become the presumptive Democratic nominee on the basis of her gender and race. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. In the days after President Biden endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris to replace him in the 2024 presidential race, several Republican lawmakers suggested that Harris had become the presumptive Democratic nominee on the basis of her gender and race. Republican Congressman Tim Burchett of Tennessee called Harris a DEI vice president, a reference to diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. Congresswoman Harriet Hagman of Wyoming called Harris a DEI hire and referred to her as intellectually just really kind of bottom of the barrel. Congressman Glenn Grofman of Wisconsin said in an interview with CBS News' affiliate WDJT in Milwaukee that Democrats feel they have to stick with her because of her ethnic background. But at this point, Kamala Harris, the sitting vice president, has decades of experience in elective office and is a seasoned politician, winning statewide elections in California for the U.S. Senate and state attorney general. She won her first race for San Francisco district attorney 20 years ago, back in 2004. Slamming Kamala Harris as a DEI candidate struck other Republicans, including former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, as totally stupid and dumb, he said on Tuesday. Other Republicans, too, have been calling on party colleagues to tamp down the rhetoric. In an interview on Thursday, 25th of July, with CBS News, Congressman Byron Donalds of Florida said the comments about DEI from his colleagues had been nipped in the bud, but that he had stressed to them, that's not where we want to go. The Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, told reporters on Wednesday, 24th of July, that the election is going to be about policies and not personalities, and said Kamala Harris's ethnicity or gender has nothing to do with this whatsoever. Attacks centering on Kamala Harris's gender and race are not new. Supporters of GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump have long targeted Harris with insults like Joe and the Ho. In 2021, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, who is now Donald Trump's running mate, told Tucker Carlson that the country was run by a bunch of childless cat ladies, including Harris. Kamala Harris is a stepmother to two children from her husband's previous marriage. On Thursday, 25th of July, Harris's stepdaughter, Ella Emhoff, posted on Instagram, "I love my three parents." And earlier, First Gentleman Doug Emhoff's former wife told the New York Times in a statement, "For over 10 years since Cole and Ella were teenagers, Kamala has been a co-parent with Doug and I. She is loving, nurturing, fiercely protective, and always present. I love our blended family, and I'm grateful to have her in it." Critics have also resurfaced an old attack on Kamala Harris that alleges her past relationships powered her political ascent. Harris dated Willie Brown in the 1990s, the year before Willie Brown was elected mayor of San Francisco. Brown, who was married but separated whilst he was dating Harris, appointed her to two state commission posts whilst he was serving as a Speaker of the California Assembly. Their relationship ended in 1995, 9 years before Kamala Harris was elected San Francisco District Attorney and later the state's Attorney General. When Harris was running to be San Francisco's District Attorney in 2003, her ties to Willie Brown made headlines. But Harris defended herself against critics who brought him up. Long-standing double standards likely contribute to the idea that some people have that Kamala Harris didn't earn her place in politics. Over half of Americans think that women must do more than men when seeking high political office, according to a 2023 Pew study. ABC News has also covered this same story and tells us more. Vice President Kamala Harris is facing criticism centered on her race from some Republican figures as she becomes the front-runner for the Democratic presidential nomination after President Joe Biden abandoned his re-election bid. On Sunday, 21st of July, Congressman Glenn Grothman, Republican of Wisconsin, told CBS 58 in Wisconsin that he believes a lot of Democrats feel they have to stick with her because of her ethnic background. Republican Congressman Tim Burchett of Tennessee accused Kamala Harris of being a DEI hire in a CNN interview on Monday and claimed that Joe Biden wanted to pick a black woman as a vice president. When you go down that route, you take mediocrity. DEI, which stands for Diversity, Equity and Inclusion, refers to the initiative and programs intended to address discrimination against historically marginalized groups within schools, businesses, or government agencies, according to industry experts. In a 2020 debate, Joe Biden stated that he would pick a woman to be vice president, not declaring a specific race. In a later interview with ABC News in August of 2020, Joe Biden added that he didn't feel pressure to select a black woman. The government should look like the people, look like the country, Biden emphasized. 51% of the people in this country are women, and that old expression goes, women hold up half the sky, and in order to be able to succeed, you've got to be dealt in across the board. In another 2020 interview with MSNBC, when asked about who his potential running mate might be, Joe Biden said, "I'm not committed to naming any of the potential candidates, but the people I've named, and among them, there are four black women." DEI has been increasingly used as a basis for criticizing or questioning the qualifications of women and people of color and other marginalized groups in positions of authority. These initiatives have been the target of conservative legislation nationwide, with lawmakers claiming they promote racial division and unfair advantages for marginalized groups. Those in favor of DEI initiatives say these programs aim to remedy long-standing forms of inequality, such as pay inequality, inaccessibility in the workplace, discrimination in hiring practices, and much more. Kamala Harris, who is currently the vice president, was a U.S. senator for 4 years, California's attorney general for 6 years, San Francisco's district attorney for about 7 years, and got her law degree from the University of California, Hastings College of Law. In an interview on NBC News, former Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy said, "The DEI attacks on Kamala Harris are stupid and dumb. I disagree with DEI, but she's the vice president of the United States. These congressmen that are saying it, they're wrong on their own instincts." Since joining the race, Kamala Harris has garnered support from Democratic legislators, advocacy groups, and others across the country. Her campaign has raised $100 million since entering the race for president on Sunday, 21st of July, according to her campaign. About 58,000 people also signed up to volunteer for the vice president's campaign, a figure that is more than 100 times its average daily sign-up rate, according to the campaign.
Thank you. Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Tour the pitch.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. I am a Muslim. Islamite. Islamite. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and right now we are here with me, Amina, and with
Asma
at Youth Station.
Of course.
A cozy corner where we gather to talk about various subjects and various topics. I feel like in today's age, every youth goes through this path, through this phase mm-hmm. where they're trying to find themselves.
Yeah.
And they ask themselves the questions, what was I born for? Who am I? What does Allah bring me here for?
The existential crisis.
Yeah, I feel every teenager goes through that phase. Every youth has yeah. that phase where they question themselves.
You know, it has been an eternal question. I mean, like, since Eden, people have been asking this question from themselves. And it's a natural compulsory part.
Of course.
And phase of our life that happens. But then, how do we answer to it differs from one person to another.
Yeah, definitely. Everyone has their own answer. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their own answer. Like, who am I? It can be a literal question. Like, I'm Amina.
Of course, and I'm Asma.
I'm Amina. This is Asma with me. This is who we are. Or you can go deeper.
But what do you want?
Yeah, no, you can go deeper.
Come on, a stranger. What do you want?
Are we strangers now, Asma? Who are you? Who are we? Who am I?
Do you know who is Amina?
Who's that? Never heard of her. But to like let go of my identity right now, of who am I, I'm Amina, I was born in Australia, I have a child, blah, 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 yada, yada, mm-hmm. yada. We can go deeper than that. Who am I truly? Who am I?
Yeah.
As a human being put onto this earth.
Exactly.
What did Allah make me? Mm-hmm. Who did Allah make me? A yeah. servant?
And that's so very deep.
It's very deep, yeah. And this is what was going to go very deep very into this. Deep. So to answer this in an Islamic way, Allah made us as his humble servants mm-hmm. to people on this earth, and he put it as a test for us.
Exactly.
To see whether our faith for him shall remain or not. And then we get to the next part, what do I want?
There's this verse that every time we turn on the radio to listen to the praying time, before that, there is a part in which the narrator keeps retelling this verse, which is so beautiful. And it says, it's actually a verse from the Holy Book of Quran that says, مَا خَلَقْتُ الْجِنَّ وَالْإِنسَ إِلَّا لِيَعْبُدُونَ. That is, I did not create a human being either than praying. I just created human beings for praying.
And the prayer has different terms, of course.
Of course, different yeah. terms. And the way I interpret it is love. Because, you know, when you pray, if you do it as a mechanical thing, it does not have any worth in
itself.
It's
empty.
It's so empty.
Yeah.
It does not have anything. The thing that adds worth to it and makes it so respectful and so worthy is your intention plus the much of love you share with your Lord. That's the thing that would add to its significance.
I feel like our whole day mm-hmm. builds into what we feel during the prayer.
Exactly.
You know, remembering Allah through the whole day, remembering him, you know, saying like his name, he's there with me, and it's just showing our love. And then when we come to our prayer, we can enter this peace of mind mm-hmm. and this feeling of absolute love towards our Creator.
So let us just clarify the setting for ourselves.
Yes.
Who am I? As a human being, when I ask myself, I come up with different answers.
Many answers.
Many, many. So we are missionaries that have got some missions to accomplish in this world. We have come into this world with some missions to accomplish. What are those missions? Well, it differs from one person to another.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget that Allah has made every being in this world, every single thing that he created, with a purpose in mind.
Of course.
So if you're ever feeling useless, like, why was I put on this earth? Allah, why did you make me? Remember that our Lord, our Creator, did not make us without a reason.
See, I would put it this way, in a much literary way, yes. Sometimes, because many people degrade themselves to the point that, okay, I have done nothing in my life. You are just a simple gardener. You have to create some flowers. You are there to take care of some flowers. Because those flowers have to be taken into a person who would create some sort of perfume out of those flowers. And then that perfume gets into the hand of a writer. And then that writer gets inspired. And then
he or she mind.
Would write something, a piece that is so fantastic in a way that would change the world.
Yeah, and someone who reads that piece feels very inspired by it.
You think you have had no hand in that writing?
We don't know.
You of course had, because you were the first one who created those flowers, and those flowers came as a perfume, and that perfume came to that writer, and that writer created such a beautiful piece because he was inspired by that perfume. See? Sometimes small, simple, little detail that might not be so important to you.
We might not even see it.
Create the entire change.
Yeah, we don't know it. See, we don't know Allah's plans for us.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We just have to assume. We just have to assume that I was made for something, and Allah knows that. And I'm sure that I have a purpose in this life.
Exactly. And do not degrade yourself.
Don't,
And the position you have in this world.
Because if you're degrading yourself, and not, you know, astaghfirullah, you're degrading Allah.
Yeah.
You're saying that if you're saying you're useless, yet made for no reason, then did Allah make you for no reason? Is that how you're going to think?
I've thought a lot about this. Who am I? And the gist of what I thought about was simply like this, that even if you do nothing, I mean, not that you don't want to, you have tried, but then you have nothing tangible for people to call as accomplishment. Maybe your existence as a daughter to your father, as a daughter to your mother, as a sister to your brother,
a mother,
as a friend to your friends and classmates, as many other adjectives that you could get in
as
this
a wife,
life.
Spouse.
Yeah, of course. Just this existence of yours could change the entire life of other people around you. And this is enough that you take care of your dear ones and you try to be a good obedient of Allah. I guess these are enough. What else God wants us? Doesn't he just ask us to be a real human being who cares about others, who cares about the responsibilities that God has put on their shoulder? No, I don't think so. The only thing he wants from us, just as I mentioned in the Holy Book of Quran, he says it very much directly, that I created human being to pray, to worship. And by worship and praying, he does not mean the act of repeating something and parroting things.
No. He's literally meaning it.
He actually and literally means, I created you for nothing except love. The thing he wants us to have is a mutual love. And that's the core of our existence.
It is, because we have to remember that Allah loves us so much.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to give that back.
Exactly.
So I hope that the youth that are listening to this, especially youth, okay, there is more for you to come. The stage that you're in your life right now, there's way more for you to come.
Exactly.
It's not going to stop there. It's not going to end there.
Sometimes your mission in this life is just to say a sentence to someone to change their life.
We don't know.
To save them from absolute death.
We have to keep on living.
Yeah.
We have to keep on worship, like, you know, loving Allah with all our being. And we will, like, you know, some people actually say, that just came to my mind, but so if we don't know the purpose that we were made for, if we don't know what Allah had in mind for us, we don't know that. So what purpose do we serve, like, for ourselves?
Exactly.
We don't know that, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So how would you describe that? Like, what purpose do we have for ourselves?
This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
We were talking about purpose.
Yeah.
What is our purpose of life? Apart from what Allah...
What is Amina's purpose of life?
Yeah,
and
apart
living?
From what Allah has made me for, what is my purpose?
Mm-hmm. What is it?
I don't know. Asma, do you know what my purpose is?
Well, I think the purpose of all of us in this life is to accomplish something. That something might be a book. That something might be a gallery of paintings.
No, it doesn't have to be anything
yeah,
grand.
Yeah, I would just tell you. Maybe.
You know, for me.
That will be
yeah.
only your heart.
You know, I feel like everyone has a time in their life where they have to accomplish something.
Yeah.
And for me personally for me, I'm not speaking for anyone else, as a mother, I want to accomplish being a great mother to my child.
And that's fantastic.
And someone else can be here and they want to be like, I want to be a great daughter to my father.
Mm-hmm.
And you could make that your purpose for now.
Yeah.
And making that your purpose, you have to complete that purpose with Allah in mind.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that should be, I guess everyone has to find their own purpose in life slowly.
You know, it depends on how you define your existence, your life, generally life, creation, why you've been sent into this world. As for me, I think that in the end of the day, when this journey of living ends one day, and then here comes the hereafter, the only thing that God is going to judge me accordingly, the only thing that according to it God is going to judge me would be my heart. How
what
pure
you've done.
My heart.
Of course, but it's the stuff that you did that.
What?
See, so you're just saying that Allah judges you based on your heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with the heart goes the actions. Your heart can be pure, but your actions can be wrong.
No. I mean, there must be an agreement between what you have done and what you have fostered in your heart.
Of course, like, you can't
I mean, like, for example, if your heart is pure enough to have the intention of helping other people and you have done it as much as your capacity would let you, as much as your energy would let you to do, then that's a great deal of job. If you have, I don't know, even helping animals would count in God's eyes. Like, to be so kind toward every single creature in this world
Yes. Is
so respectful in God's eyes, according to what the narrations tells us. Of course, I'm not saying these things out of myself, out of nowhere, out of the blue. I'm just saying that if I have all of these good intentions in my heart, if I try to shape a heart that is created out of diamond, then I think he would respect that. He would judge it based on my actions, of course.
I'm sorry for interrupting you. I just had to be more clear with it.
Yeah.
You know, what were you saying exactly?
So when I say heart,
you're saying
I
actions
literally
as well.
Mean heart, but what I mean actually is my actions and how I treated other people. Because we have it in one of the quotes by Imam Ali alayhi mm-hmm. salam that says, you have always been the best God I could have ever imagined. So help me
he's
be...
He's saying this to Allah?
Yeah. Help me be the best obedient you have ever wanted me to be.
If you're listening to this and you're mm-hmm. wondering, who am I and what was I created for? Just remember, you were created for Allah, by
exactly.
Allah. For Allah. And at the end of the day, it's always about Allah.
And of course, what adds to your worth is the much of connection you have with Him. And according to that, the way you act with other people.
Yeah.
So this was all.
Unfortunately, it came.
Unfortunately. Again, time is running so
fast. We would
fun.
Love to keep talking about this.
And it was so interesting, of
it
course.
It was. I kind of learned some new things.
Yeah. And that's a very interesting question. The mere thought of who am I and
it
what
raises,
do I want.
It's so deep.
Yeah.
You just keep going.
And
it's
so
like
interesting.
It's very interesting.
One session is not enough, but then that's it. This is the ending point for today's
Unfortunately.
Episode. So happy to meet you, Amina. And thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us until another session. Bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Allah, 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 Allah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli forces continue to commit more crimes against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, raising the death toll from the genocide to over 39,200. Israeli forces launch a new round of incursions into the occupied West Bank, abducting several youths in the Palestinian territory. And Venezuela's Electoral Council declares incumbent Maduro the winner of the presidential election with over 51% of the votes. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Israel presses ahead with its onslaught on Gaza, killing more Palestinians across the besieged territory. At least five Palestinians have been killed in Khan Yunis, where the regime strikes are the most intense. Many Palestinians also remain trapped by the fighting in Barij and Nusayrat in central Gaza, unable to flee after Israel ordered them to evacuate. Other parts of the Strip are also under heavy Israeli bombing. In a matter of 24 hours, nearly 40 Palestinians have been killed in the regime's attacks across the territory. The ongoing Israeli genocide has left more than 39,300 people dead and nearly 91,000 others wounded since October 2023. Most of the victims are women and children. Our Gaza correspondent Muteba Musaba joined us earlier from Deir Rabbala to give us updates on the latest Israeli strikes. Let's take a listen.
Let me begin with the central area of Gaza Strip, whereas 29,000 Palestinian civilians were forcibly expelled out of Al Burayj refugee camp in addition to vast parts of Nusrat refugee camp. They demanded the Palestinian people to go to Al-Mawasi area, knowing that Al-Mawasi area is completely overcrowded with hundreds of thousands of the Palestinian